is America. That's Elizabeth Cubitt Cavalli, and I, Lou Cavalli, welcome you to the cutting-edge news program, The Divided Kingdom. Two of you most faithful listeners have said, quote, "We wait with bated breath each week to see what your program reveals," unquote. And now, besides hearing us on WWCR, Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on 4.840 megahertz, and Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. on 7.490 megahertz, and on LWRN.net at 5 p.m. Eastern on Mondays, repeating at 11 p.m., you can also go to kstartalkradio.com and get an app for your phone. You also have the option of using your phone to listen. The times to hear us on kstartalkradio.com are 5 p.m. Saturdays and 10 a.m. Sundays. Here is the phone number. Mobile phone charges for minutes may apply depending upon your phone plan. You can dial 1-605-562-5330. That's 1-605-562-5330.
And Lou, please give the time again for kstartalkradio.com when we can be heard on that phone number or using the app.
Yes, that's 5 p.m. on Saturdays and 10 a.m. on Sundays. Now, jumping right in, August 15th, 2019, the Sharks got the sailor of the Lolita Express, while one of the passengers emerged unscathed, alive and well. Calling in Time magazine, August 19th, for the U.S. to, quote, reinstate the assault weapons ban. Now, here we have a viewpoint by none other than Bill Clinton. And these are his words. "For too long, America has allowed a determined, well-financed group to pretend to grieve with us, while spreading paranoia among those who responsibly use guns for hunting, sport shooting, and self-protection. For too long, the gun lobby and their elected allies have stalled, deflected, and changed the conversation until the pressure abates and they can get back to business, heedless of the killings inevitably yet to come. The red flag law is a good idea. Also, we can and should do more to prevent, treat, and manage mental illness. But the incidence of mental illness in America is similar to that of other wealthy nations. Yet, we have far more deadly mass shootings. What's different is the sheer number of guns per capita and the widespread accessibility of weapons of war. We know reinstating the assault weapons ban and the ammunition limit and making improved background check universal will help. We have talked, tweeted, and delayed long enough. This is about who we are as a country, what America will look like years from now, and whether our children and grandchildren will be safer and freer to grow up. I have always believed in the inherent goodness of people. I still do. I have spent my life trying to advance the idea that our common humanity matters more than our interesting differences, and working for a world in which we are coming together, not being torn apart. We can take a big step toward that world by keeping assault weapons out of the hands of those who wish to destroy it." And those are the words of Bill Clinton.
Yes, the globalist, let's get on the world together, and let's just get moving toward global government.
Now, from Fox News, by Brooke Sigmund, August 12, 2019, Attorney General William Barr decries serious irregularities, that's in quotes, serious irregularities in Epstein's detention, and vows a full investigation. Attorney General William Barr on Monday blasted corrections officials and vowed to investigate the serious irregularities uncovered at the federal prison in Manhattan, where accused sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein was held and found dead Saturday morning. Barr vowed a comprehensive probe by the FBI and the Justice Department Inspector General. This is in quotes by Barr himself, "This sex trafficking case was very important to the Department of Justice and to me personally," Barr said. "It was important to the dedicated prosecutors at the Southern District of New York and to our FBI agents who investigated the case and were preparing it for trial. Most importantly, this case was important to the victims, who had the courage to come forward and deserve the opportunity to confront the accused in the courtroom. Barr continued, "Let me assure you this case will continue on against anyone who was complicit with Epstein. Any conspirators should not rest easy. The victims deserve justice and will get it." Unquote. Epstein, who was accused of sex trafficking minors, was found unresponsive inside a cell at the Metropolitan Correctional Center in New York City around 6:30 a.m. on Saturday. Life-saving measures were initiated immediately by staff. He was then transported to New York Presbyterian Lower Manhattan Hospital, where he was declared dead on arrival, officials said. Epstein's death at MCC also came hours after more than 2,000 documents were unsealed by the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of New York. The papers included affidavits and depositions of key witnesses in a lawsuit. The now 33-year-old woman, Virginia Ramitz Giffray, filed against Epstein and his associate, Ghislaine Maxwell, in 2015. Giffray accused the duo of keeping her as a sex slave in the early 2000s when she was underage. In the documents, Giffray claimed to have been forced to have sex and provide erotic massages to powerful politicians, foreign leaders, and businessmen. Giffray alleged she was forced to have sex with former New York and make that New Mexico governor, Bill Richardson, Britain's Prince Andrew, the late American scientist Marvin Minsky, hedge fund manager Glenn Dubin, and another prince, that's in quotes, another prince, a large hotel chain owner, Stephen Kaufman, and model scout Jean-Luc Renel. Giffray also revealed that she was, quote-unquote, trafficked to former Democratic Senator George Mitchell, who represented Maine from 1980 to 1995, served as Senate Majority Leader, and was later named Special Envoy to the Middle East by then-President Barack Obama. Excuse me one second here.
And these names keep surfacing. We have heard about these sex slaves with our government figures being there. See, nothing is as it seems. Black is white, white is black.
That's correct. Giffray also has long claimed that Epstein forced her to have sex with Harvard Law professor Alan Dershowitz. In the newly revealed documents, Giffray, who was at the time labeled as Jane Doe No. 3, claimed that Epstein required her to have sexual relations with Dershowitz on numerous occasions while she was a minor. Giffray claimed to have had the encounters in Florida on private planes in New York, New Mexico, and in the U.S. Virgin Islands. Dershowitz has emphatically denied the allegations. And now, what else do we have? Paul Joseph Watson of InfoWars.com on Monday, August 12th, weighed in on Jeffrey Epstein's hastened demise. It was revealed, and this is, again, from InfoWars.com, Paul Joseph Watson, it was revealed that correctional officers working at the prison didn't check on Epstein for hours, and that's in quotes, hours, before his suicide, despite being required to do so every 30 minutes. Jeffrey Epstein's cellmate was transferred out the day before the billionaire sex trafficker alleged quote-unquote suicide, meaning there was no witness to observe it. What a stunning coincidence. Things just happen to be convenient there. It reminds me so much of the fate of Lee Harvey Oswald 2 days after he was alleged to have killed President Kennedy. They could have transferred him. They claimed it was safer to have him in the county, Dallas County Jail, instead of the Dallas City Jail. So they decided to transfer him, and they could have done it at night, unannounced, and probably had no problem whatsoever. But instead, they broadcast to the world that they were going to transfer him. They said exactly where he'd be and the approximate time. I think it was delayed for an hour, but then they rebroadcast the new and updated time. And who should appear just at the perfect time but Jack Ruby with a gun in his hand, and this is in the Dallas City police department basement, garage, and Jack leaped forward, pulled the trigger, and that was the end of Lee Harvey Oswald. Very, very, very convenient. And Jack Ruby, when the police tackled him, said, "You all know me. I'm Jack Ruby."
Oh, how fortunate.
Yep.
These coincidences just seem to mount up, don't they, Lou?
They sure do. And some other information we have. Some of the blamed overworked guards for the inability to check on Epstein. I heard today that they were supposed to have fallen asleep. Also very convenient, isn't it? But only one other inmate at the facility successfully carried out a suicide attempt in the last 21 years. Epstein was taken off suicide watch at the end of July, despite supposedly attempting to kill himself a week before. According to some reports, Epstein had been warning guards and other prisoners that someone was trying to kill him. A prison insider also said that Epstein appeared to be in good spirits before his alleged suicide. Said the source, quote, "There was no indication that he might try to take his own life. From what I saw, he was finally starting to adjust to prison. I think he was comforted by the rigidity of his new life." Now we have some more headlines, also from InfoWars. Suicide nearly impossible at Epstein's lockup, says media report. Former inmate says guards monitored us like lab rats. Inmate suicide is, quote, nearly impossible at the ultra-secure lockup that was housing Jeffrey Epstein, according to a media report. The Federal Metropolitan Correctional Center only had one successful suicide in 21 years, when Louis Tura hung himself in 1998. That's according to the New York Post. Also according to that post, a handful of suicide attempts were also reported, but life in the specialized units often involves inmates being watched by cameras in their cells and checked by guards almost constantly. One former inmate, Yusair Paracha, who was held there for 2 years until 2005, wrote that he was subjected to frequent strip searches, isolation from other prisoners, lights were left on 22 or 23 hours per day. He said guards, quote, monitored us like lab rats. Apparently, Epstein wasn't given the same treatment, considering another report stating that the convicted sex offender wasn't checked every 30 minutes by guards as required and was even removed from suicide watch despite having been found injured in his cell in late July. Reuters reported, quote, "It was not immediately clear why Epstein was taken off suicide watch." At the MCC, two jail guards are required to make separate checks on all prisoners every 30 minutes. But that procedure was not followed overnight, according to the source. In addition, every 15 minutes, guards are required to make another check on prisoners who are on suicide watch. It was also reported there was no video of Epstein's death. And the Post reported in a separate article, quote, "There's no surveillance video of the incident in which Jeffrey Epstein apparently hanged himself in a federal lockup in the lower Manhattan," law enforcement officials told the Post on Sunday. Although there are cameras in the 9 South Wing, where the convicted pedophile was being held at the Metropolitan Correctional Center, they are trained on the areas outside the cells and not inside, according to sources familiar with the setup there.
So, Lou, I'm going to do a P.S. to this, and then I'm going to look at the situation over in London where there aren't any guns. Okay, so now you can move on to do what you need to do next. So this headline from PrisonPlanet.com is, "Pathologist connected to JFK investigation to conduct autopsy on Epstein." Now, this was Paul Joseph Watson, PrisonPlanet.com, August 12, 2019. And this is a comforting little PS, I think, this headline. And, of course, Watson says, "Let the conspiracy theories commence." Pathologist Michael Baden, who served as chairman of the House Select Committee on Assassinations Forensic Pathology Panel that investigated the assassination of John F. Kennedy, is set to conduct an independent autopsy on Jeffrey Epstein. Epstein's representatives have hired celebrity pathologist Michael Baden to conduct an independent autopsy, and they were allowed to observe the autopsy, reports the Daily Beast. As chairman of the investigation into the JFK assassination, Baden bolstered the official story that Kennedy was killed by a single bullet, also known as the magic bullet theory. Baden, whose career has revolved around investigating high-profile deaths, also testified at the trials of O.J. Simpson and Phil Spector. Some are wondering whether having Baden carry out the autopsy is a good idea, given the deluge of conspiracy theories circulating about Epstein's alleged, quote, suicide. Of course, this may or may not mean anything at all, comments Vlad Tapes, but getting a coroner connected to these cases doesn't strike one as a way to lead to confidence in transparency of the process. You know, maybe Lou and all of you listeners, 50 years from now, there'll be a government incentive for those last holdouts who refuse to take the AI brain chip. They'll get the privilege to see the unredacted files of the Epstein case. The secret society Valentine celebration, pillow death of Justice Antonin Scalia, maybe they'll get to see those. And maybe they'll even get to peek into the covert deep state part of the Clinton Foundation. As Keats's poem Ozymandias implies, despite man's hubris and monuments, we're each just a finite grain of sand, blown away as time marches irrevocably onward. And I said now, since former President Clinton wanted us to think about the gun laws and getting rid of so many guns and to embrace the red flag laws, which has already apparently committed almost an injustice, I think, in a case already here in Maryland. But let's just look what things are like with no guns at all in our neighbor across the pond's land, and that is formerly Bright Britannia. This is what it's like now in what was once that empire that the sun never set upon entirely. Bright Britannia ruled the world. But we have this article, Latent Stabbing. Man charged with attempted murder of police officer in London. This is by Chiara Giordano. And this says, 28-year-old officer in serious but stable condition, police say. A man has been charged with the attempted murder of a police officer in East London. Rodwin, 56, of Villiers Close, Luton, has been charged with attempted murder and possession of an offensive weapon in connection with the attack. He is due to appear at Thames Magistrates Court on Friday morning. PC Stuart Outon remains in hospital in a serious but stable condition, police said on Friday. The 28-year-old's injuries are not believed to be life-threatening. Mr. Outon managed to taser his attacker during the assault, which lasted seconds. The attack happened after the patrol officer tried to stop a van suspected of having no insurance. Metropolitan Police Federation Chairman Ken Marsh said, quote, police officers across London are out there every day at risk protecting the public, and sadly, yet again, a Metropolitan police officer has suffered a severe injury on duty. Enough is enough. Police officers should be going home at the end of their shifts, not to hospital. Boris Johnson offered his sympathies to the injured officer. The Prime Minister said, what this underscores for me is the bravery of our police, people who actually go towards danger to keep us safer. No, listeners here in America, what this underscores to us should be the stupidity of any populace that gives up their Second Amendment rights. No, you must not give up your Second Amendment rights here in America. This tradition must be held in steadfast promise to those people who gave us our Declaration of Independence and our country. No, we cannot let something like that happen here and then be mealy-mouthed, oh, how brave the police are to be going out there, when people are now armed with knives alone in Great Britain. It's just unbelievable to me that this has happened in my lifetime. It's also unbelievable as we see jihad continuing and the dangers, the no-go zones. We must not permit this here in America. And one reason we're on the air on WWCR, we don't want to see this proliferation of a quiet kind of dawah, the kind of deception that is bringing in the mosques carefully. We don't want those deep state military compounds that are there in America in many, many places. We don't want this plan. We don't want an overthrow of America. And if you want to help us stay on the air, please send us some cash, some postage stamps, a money order or two. Checks can only be made out to WWCR. And you can send it to Lou, capital L-O-U, Caverly, capital C-A-V-E-R-L-Y. And the address is Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, capital B-E-T-H-L-E-H-E-M, Maryland, 21609. And again, that is Lou Caverly, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. We want to thank some of you listeners who have definitely sacrificially helped us this summer to stay on air as things get more and more serious. We see that it's coming. It's spiritually coming. The judgment is coming. Politically, the continued harassment and ugly animus against figures who do love America. When we think about people having Antifa and this type of group, these violent figures coming to your home. Mitch McConnell and his family being threatened to be beaten up. Tucker Carlson, the commentator on Fox, having to move his family out of D.C. Are you going to wait till they come to your neighborhood? Are you going to stand up now against these big tech giants who are deplatforming everybody? Alex Jones is basically gone, but he's not completely gone. The people are still with him. The people are still with Donald Trump. He has brought our economy up. He has unfolded many, many jobs, more jobs than ever for Hispanic and African Americans. No, we don't want to be like Britannia. It hurts my heart to think about that wonderful heritage. I was an English major, English, and I also took many French courses. I don't like to see this, and here it is. Here is the headline by Pamela Geller, August 11th, 2019. School trips to Sadiq's London now high-risk activity. What? You know, I had a little pen pal named Delise Lewis, capital D-I-L-Y-S Lewis, when I was in high school. Somehow my mother, the English teacher, I think, arranged this, and I wrote to her. And, you know, just in the last year, I got curious about her, and I said, Lou, go online and see if you can find Delise Lewis. She had died, I think, decades earlier, hadn't she, Lou?
Yes, I believe that
and
she
And we
had.
Think that was probably she, because the name is so unusual, the two names together, Delise Lewis. Now, I wouldn't have feared, had I been a traveling kind of person, to go over there and go to London and go touring around with Delise decades ago, but not now. This article again says school trips to Sadiq's London now high risk activity. So one English county now recognizes the new facts of life on multicultural Britain. Visiting London is a high-risk venture. London, once the capital of an empire upon which the sun never set. Sadly, Britain can probably sink lower yet. And this is by Paul Faulkner, Lancashire Post, August 10th, 2019, but Pamela Geller brought it to her website. Day trips to London are to be included in a higher risk category when Lancashire schools are planning educational activities away from their own premises. Visits to multiple venues in other cities have also moved into the so-called Type B category, which means that they will now require prior approval from Lancashire County Council. New plans have been put in place to keep pupils safe outside of the classroom. Previously, such trips had been classified as type A activities, like field trips and visits to museums and theaters, which could be authorized by senior leaders within an individual school. Now they will be categorized alongside adventure outings, like kayaking, climbing and motorsports. All overnight stays at any location also need the council to give the go-ahead. Parental consent is required for each individual Type B visit, whereas Type A trips require only general consent at the start of the year, although parents must still be informed of any trip away from the school. Cabinet members heard that young people are now taught of the need to be, quote, risk aware, while the new guidelines stress that it is the duty of all accompanying adults on a trip to intervene where they witness, when they witness it should be, quote, unsafe practice or fear that it is about to occur. We just can't believe the changes here. I think it also says schools will also have to undertake an assessment of every trip after it is over to learn lessons from any close calls. Failure to do so could invalidate their insurance. Lou, if you were a parent in Great Britain, would you even permit your child to go where they're going to talk about post-close calls?
No, I would.
I don't think so.
I would not give that a thought. I would just refuse.
Yes, I think so. And now I think you have some things we're picking up again.
Yes, there's more on jihad in Europe. The headline from PrisonPlanet.com, and actually the original source was Breitbart, says Swedish minister attacks Polish MEP who claimed people fleeing Sweden, August 12, 2019. Polish member of the European Parliament, Beata Mazurek, a member of the Conservative Law and Justice Party, criticized Sweden's migration policy, saying, quote, assassinations, increased crime, rape, fear, and Sharia zones. These are the consequences of multiculturalism and open doors for immigrants. Swedes are fleeing their country to find peace and normality in Poland, unquote. Johansson, that was the Swedish justice minister, responded saying that the problem was not Swedes going to Poland, but was instead Polish criminals coming to Sweden, and said that between 2017 and 2018, around three times the number of Poles moved to Sweden and vice versa. Johansson said, quote, something we actually have problems with is foreign theft gangs, not least from Poland. Foreign gangs are behind almost half of all burglaries in Sweden, and 90% of all thefts of cars, boats, boat engines, and agricultural machinery. If the honorable member can do something about it, I would be grateful, unquote. The row comes after former Swedish resident Dennis Lizov fled the country to Poland to seek asylum with his daughters in April, when they were put in a foster home with a Muslim family 186 miles away from where Lizov lived. Elizabeth?
And we have next, Jihad Watch, Robert Spencer, August 11, 2019, reports in Germany, Muslim migrant sexually assaults and bites 7-year-old girl. Jihad Watch, Robert Spencer, as we've been looking at August 11, 2019, has reported from Germany, and I think the earliest report was August the 7th, and this was a 7-year-old girl sexually molested and bitten by a Muslim migrant, and this was in Erding near Munich. And a 23-year-old Afghan citizen had to answer before the Erding District Court because he allegedly kissed and bit a 7-year-old girl against her will. The defendant has already been tried in court several times for sexual offenses. The asylum seeker had already stalked a female student on a train, resisted his subsequent arrest, and in 2016 and 2017 stalked young women, some of whom were still minors, and touched them indecently. In this current case, the Afghan had been invited to a barbecue party, which took place in the home of his friend's partner in the Northern District of Erding. He first touched the 10-year-old on the chest and in the genital area. Then her 7-year-old sister was next. He kissed her, sucked her lips, and bit on them. After the children revealed to the parents of what had happened, they informed the police, who began an investigation and brought the case to trial. The defendant was sentenced to 1 year and 4 months in prison without parole. We must bring you the warnings, all these dangers that are coming closer. And now, the next item is a rather shocking one from Pamela Geller, August 12th. Europe poised to put warning labels on Jewish-made products. A yellow star for a label, perhaps? This is no different than the Nazi boycott of the Jews. Now it's all of Europe. And this really originally came out of the Washington Free Beacon, August 12th, by Adam Credo. Europe poised to put warning labels on Jewish-made products. The European Union is poised to mandate that Israeli products made in contested territories carry consumer warning labels, a decision that could trigger American anti-boycott laws and open up what legal experts describe as a Pandora's box of litigation, according to multiple sources involved in the legal dispute who spoke to the Washington Free Beacon. The Advocate General of the European Court of Justice recently issued non-binding opinion arguing that EU law requires Israeli-made products to be labeled as coming from, quote, settlements and, quote, Israeli colonies. The decision was seen as a major win for supporters of the anti-Semitic boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, or BDS, which seeks to wage economic warfare on Israel and its citizens. Pro-Israel activists, as well as the Jewish businesses involved in the legal dispute, see the decision as an ominous warning sign that they say is reminiscent of Holocaust-era boycotts of Jewish businesses. With the EU court's 15-judge panel now poised to issue its own binding judgment in the case, legal experts are warning that a potential decision mandating such labeling could pave the way for goods from any disputed territory to receive such treatment. The decision also could trigger U.S. anti-boycott laws meant to stop Israeli-made goods from being singled out for unfair treatment on the international market. Brooke Goldstein, a human rights lawyer and executive director of the Lawfare Project, which is involved in the legal dispute, described the EU court's initial decision as, quote, frankly outrageous. Quote, the Advocate General's opinion said that goods produced by Muslims are to be labeled from Palestine, and goods produced by Jews labeled as coming from Israeli colonies. Goldstein said, both people are living in the same geographic location, and yet Jewish goods are being treated differently. Could the discrimination be any clearer, she asked? If the EU court justifies this bigotry, it would degrade the rule of law in Europe, and it will undoubtedly have many unintended consequences for EU traders. My understanding is that certain consumer protection agencies have already filed complaints to demand a similar labeling of goods from other disputed territories. This labeling fiasco will turn into a nightmare for EU importers of goods from any and all countries involved in territorial disputes. I trust the court will maintain that goods must be labeled, indicating the geographical location of origin, and reject the push to politicize labeling. The legal dispute first began after France passed a law mandating that products made in the West Bank territory of Israel be labeled as coming from an Israeli colony, a label not applied to any other products across the globe. The term Israeli colony is not legally required to be applied under EU law and was seen as overly burdensome by Israeli business leaders. Following the French decision, the Israeli Sego Winery filed a lawsuit alleging unlawful discrimination against Jewish companies. That lawsuit eventually made its way to Europe's highest court, the European Court of Justice. That court now appears poised to affirm the Advocate General's opinion, mandating that Israeli goods be labeled in a fashion that opponents say is unfair and anti-Semitic in nature. There's more on that, Lou, isn't there?
There is. Yaakov Berg, CEO of the Sego Winery, told the Free Beacon, quote, I am not a psychologist, so I can't tell you what the motives are behind Europe's targeting of Jewish-owned businesses. Perhaps it is anti-Semitism rearing its ugly head again. Perhaps it is blind ignorance, or even a desire to do the right thing. Regardless, the application of the current EU trade directive to label goods from Jewish producers and only Jewish producers in the West Bank is discriminatory and illegal, unquote. Berg maintains that Jewish businesses should not be penalized by policies enacted by the Israeli government that European leaders object to. We are not the Israeli government, said Berg. Sego Winery is not responsible for Israeli government policy, but because we are Jewish owners of a winery in a beautiful and hotly contested land, we are being targeted and punished. And we are being punished precisely because we are Jews living in Judea, where we have every right to be, as do the Palestinian Arabs and the Druze and the Christians. He went on to say, no one should be discriminated against because of their religion. If you support a Palestinian state, would you support a Judenrein state of Palestine? That seems to be what the EU is proposing when it says Jewish businesses are illegal in Palestine, but Muslim businesses are not in the same location. Such a de facto boycott of Jewish products, the likes of which we have not seen since Nazi Germany, would definitely run afoul of U.S. law, unquote. Yohan Benizri, a lawyer representing Sego, warned that a decision affirming the labels for Jewish-made goods could open the door to other types of overly onerous labeling. He said, quote, one doesn't need legal training to recognize the unintended consequences of the EU adopting a policy of politicizing labeling. If the EU court rules that geographic location is not enough and that EU law mandates every product coming from either a disputed territory or a country with, quote, objectionable social policies, unquote, be labeled as such, then EU markets will be thrown into chaos. Can you imagine a situation where plastic cups imported from China must be labeled, this country is a one-child policy, or gas from Russia must be labeled, this is gas from a country that illegally occupies Crimea, or products from the United States require the labeling, the U.S. engages in capital punishment and is building an illegal border wall. Product labels will become political billboards depending on the whims of EU politicians. And every EU importer will shoulder a liability for not complying with arbitrary labeling laws. A State Department spokesman told the Free Beacon that the Trump administration has been clear in its objection to the BDS movement and efforts to single out the Jewish state. The official said, quote, the State Department is aware of this particular issue. The administration's position, strongly opposing all efforts to boycott, delegitimize, or isolate Israel, is well known.
But we also have to remember, from a spiritual perspective, Madame Blavatsky, we remember that in her writings that supposedly came from an ascended master, the Theosophy writings, that there were two populations of people who had to be eradicated before the New World Order came in, the global government, because these two were not progressive enough. They were too fundamentalist in their viewpoints about God, and those were the Christians and the Jews, the Bible-believing Jews, not the atheistic Jews. So we can see now, if we don't get these things stopped, I'm not sure you'll have time to tell us about what's going on with the big tech giants and the crackdowns in China. If not, we'll pick that up next week.
Yes.
But at any rate, we can see the trend is there. The Trump years are holding it back, but the trend is there for those people to be picked on and targeted who are Christians and Bible-believing Jews. Now, let's not think that this is not in America at all. We see here August 14, 2019, by Robert Spencer of Jihad Watch. Here's the headline. California introduces blatantly anti-Semitic and anti-Israel lessons into its official high school curriculum. And this headline appeared in the Washington Free Beacon, August 12th, written by Adam Credo. The state of California has introduced blatantly anti-Semitic and anti-Israel lessons into its official high school curriculum, drawing outrage and concern in the state's Jewish and pro-Israel communities, according to multiple sources involved in the controversy. The California Department of Education is facing backlash after permitting a host of anti-Israel activists to build a statewide educational curriculum that demonizes the Jewish state and is said to be fostering hatred of Jewish and Israeli American students, sources said. Already, 83 pro-Israel and anti-discrimination organizations have petitioned the state's education department to reform its Ethnic Studies Model Curriculum, ESMC, to remove multiple instances of what they say is anti-Semitic and anti-Israel bias. Multiple sources involved in the fight have described to the Washington Free Beacon anti-Semitic courses that they say are fostering an unsafe environment for Jewish and Israeli American students. Further information obtained by the Free Beacon reveals that several of the educators involved in pushing the new curriculum have a history of anti-Israel activism that has often spilled into anti-Semitic territory. The curriculum, the organizations claim, is the result of an effort by several leading educators who have expressed these anti-Semitic viewpoints. And we have Shoham Nicolay, head of the Israeli the Israel American Council, an organization working to oppose the curriculum and expose those behind it, told the Free Beacon that California's small, tight-knit Israeli American community is concerned that this curriculum will foster anti-Semitism in the state schools. As immigrants of this country, we're looking at a curriculum that will discriminate based on ethnic backgrounds, Nicolay said. After researching the educators behind the new curriculum, Nicolay said he was, quote, surprised to find out that you have people who are supporters of BDS publicly, end of quote. The global BDS movement has been described not just by pro-Israel leaders, but also by many members of Congress as an anti-Semitic movement that seeks to wage economic warfare on Israel and Jewish citizens. It's odd that a professional committee that's supposed to have an impact on the education of millions of kids in California in public school and is funded by taxpayers is so biased, Nicolay said. How come the BDS movement is part of what is supposed to be allowed in classrooms in California? Well, now, we might interject, how come radical Islam is being pushed everywhere? This is part of that, too. The takeover, the takedown of America, the leftists, George Soros and Antifa, all of this is a background, a sinister background, you see, to this thing that seems so oddly out of place. We must bring that all up. Now, back to the article. Public research materials viewed by the Free Beacon reveal that several committee members behind California Department of Education's draft ethnic studies model curriculum are outspoken critics of Israel. One member, Samaya Shoman, is a Palestinian-American who teaches in the San Mateo Union High District. Her lesson plans on Palestinian history have been featured as a teaching tool by the Qatar Foundation International, a group tied to the nation, and its efforts to proliferate boycotts of Israel. Shoman is also a pro-Palestinian activist on Twitter. Now, do we see the infiltration of Dawa, these people who never intended to assimilate? Trump is right when he lambasted several of the new women Congress members. They're not really in sympathy with American values. They want this jihad, is what they want, apparently. This is alleged, of course, but we see their actions. We see their comments. There's no love of American values. No, if some of these people had their way, we would have Sharia law everywhere. Now, back to the article. Another committee member, Gay Teresa Johnson, an associate professor at UCLA College of Social Sciences, also has supported pro-Palestinian causes on Twitter, including retweets from pro-Iran individuals who have deemed Tehran as the victim in the ongoing nuclear standoff with the United States. A third committee member, Teresa Montaño, a professor at California State University, Northridge, has publicly supported the BDS movement and advocates for Israeli scholars to be boycotted in the United States. Montaño also signed a 2009 letter to then-President Barack Obama that was organized by one of the globe's most prominent BDS organizations. Now, we have some pushback. Thankfully, we have some pushback. The Geller Report staff on August 14, 2019, said California State Board of Education says proposed anti-Semitic pro-jihad curriculum will be, quote, substantially redesigned. Excellent. Kudos to the 83 pro-Israel organizations who took a stand against anti-Semitism. However, they should not stop with this victory. They should also demand that certain members of the Model Curriculum Advisory Committee be fired for attempting to normalize anti-Semitism in California high schools. CA, California State Board of Education says proposed ethnic studies curriculum will be substantially redesigned. That headline was in the Jewish Journal, August 13th, by Aaron Bandler. And again, they're repeating that there will be an entirely new draft. SBE President Linda Darling Hammond, Vice President Eileen Strauss, and Board Member Felicia Ortiz-Licon said in a statement, "The current draft model curriculum falls short and needs to be substantially redesigned. Following the Instructional Quality Commission's review and response to all public comments, a new draft will be developed for State Board of Education review and potential approval. The board will ultimately adopt an ethnic studies model curriculum that aligns to California's values." You see, we must stand up against these things. It pays. And when we're thinking again about the leftists and their desire for anarchy and the takedown of America, the Republic, Lou, pick up what the lieutenant governor said about Antifa. We have that still hanging over us.
Yes, the Texas lieutenant governor warned Antifa, stay out of Texas in the wake of the Walmart shooting. We gave a little of this last time, but it's well worth repeating.
Yes, because the deadline isn't even up yet.
No, that's right. Antifa is planning a border resistance, that's in quotes, border resistance exercise involving a, quote, militancy training tour that will converge on a 10-day siege in El Paso, Texas, unquote, a July tweet from journalist Andy Ngo said.
And we talked the last time how Antifa and the leftists, those types of groups, gave him a brain hemorrhage.
That's exactly right. Now, Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick told Antifa to, quote, stay out of Texas, unquote, in the aftermath of a shooting at the El Paso Walmart. Patrick said to Fox News that police have a 21-year-old male suspect in custody. Well, now we know that it's no longer a question of doubt that he has confessed to the crime. And at the time of this writing, they said there were 15 to 20 casualties, but we know there were more than that. The lieutenant governor referred to reports that an Antifa group plans to go to Texas and perform militancy exercises at the border. Patrick warned the group to stay out of Texas, said Lieutenant Governor Patrick, a Republican. I was looking at a story recently in the last couple days where Antifa is posting they want to come to El Paso and do a 10-day siege. Here's a clear message to Antifa. Stay out of El Paso. Stay out of Texas, basically. We don't need them coming in on September 1st. We didn't need them to begin with beforehand, or before this happened, meaning the mass shooting, he said. I would say to Antifa, scratch Texas off the map and don't come in.
Yes, and it's important that we find out about some of these hidden organizations, and we started to mention another leftist kind of thing, and this comes from Hope for the World update by Gary Caw, and this is summer 2019, Dirty Politics. We have some excerpts from this for you by Gary Caw. I have never been a party loyalist when it comes to American politics, largely because I've understood that the socialist New Age agenda of the One World movement has been advanced over the years by proponents in both the Republican and Democratic parties. However, the situation in the Democratic Party has now reached a point where it is next to impossible to be a knowledgeable Democrat and a knowledgeable Christian at the same time. Unless one is extremely naive or completely unaware of what the Democratic Party currently stands for, one cannot serve Christ with a sincere heart and still vote Democrat. It is not unfair to say that the Democratic Party is engaged in an all-out assault on this country's Judeo-Christian principles and on Bible-believing followers of Jesus Christ. The extremist, immoral, anti-biblical positions of this party's leaders can no longer be ignored or denied. Their radical beliefs are on full display for all to see. If the televised debates have shown us anything, it is that the Democratic presidential contenders are not afraid to boldly voice their far-left anti-Christian beliefs. They feel their time has come. They have the vast majority of the media, the movers and shakers of the Internet, and registered Democratic voters on their side. In a recent poll, cited by Fox News on July 3rd, socialists Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, and Pete Buttigieg would carry a combined total of 51% of the Democratic vote if the election were held now. The other far-left candidates would garner another 22% of the vote. Joe Biden, who is deemed the front-runner, could only muster a little over 20% in his poll. Even though Biden has been a globalist most of his life and is quite liberal in his own right, he is apparently too conservative for the new generation of radical socialists. As a result, he's moving further and further to the left to chase his party's growing socialist wave. If these people, these three-fourths of the Democrats, are now squarely in the far-left socialist camp, if they come to power, we should expect persecution on a grand scale. Bear in mind, many of these individuals hold pagan, earth-centered, occultic views and are devoted Marxists. None of this bodes well for those of us who believe in the God of the Bible. The leading figures within the One World Socialist Movement are not naive. They are plain wicked. The results of their efforts, if they succeed, will be anarchy, civil war, the demise of our republic, and the subjugation of America under a global socialist government regime. Many Christians wanting to believe the best in people have a difficult time accepting the fact that there are so many evil people who would intentionally do such things. They have already forgotten the lessons of World War II and tend to dismiss the prophetic warnings of Scripture. Unless they take the time to do some genuine, open-minded research of their own, they will remain in a state of delusional bliss, not waking up until it is too late to effectively defend their freedoms. And we might quickly say that both Gary Kaw's parents, I think his mother had to flee Hitler, I think they had to flee Stalin. The Institute for Policy Studies, now, Gary gets into the heart of this matter of what this thing is. Leftist one-world organizations have been networking together for many decades. One of the lesser-known groups that is having a huge influence on the Democratic platform is the Institute for Policy Studies, IPS. It is little more than a leftist Soviet propaganda front that has made its way to the core of the Democratic Party. The mainstream media would never volunteer information about this dangerous organization. Why would they expose one of their own? According to investigative reporter Frank Holmes, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and Bernie Sanders are among those on board. Here are some excerpts from his April 23rd article titled, Insane. 2020 Election Conspiracy Uncovered, first published by the Horn News Service. Their secret relationship came out of the shadows after Democratic presidential candidate Kirsten Gillibrand signed on to a new racial wealth redistribution plan the group drew up. Gillibrand threw her support behind a report of 10 solutions to bridge the racial wealth divide written by the Institute for Policy Studies. The plan calls for slavery reparations, giving money to every American baby at birth, guaranteeing everyone a job, and adopting Medicare to all. You've heard the same things from other top 2020 Democrats, and their far-left plan isn't as extreme as the group behind it. The IPS has spent 66 years getting U.S. spies killed, calling for revolutionary change to the Constitution, defending communism and terrorism around the world, and blaming it all on the United States. IPS follows the classic Leninist design of having a revolutionary cell of politically motivated activists attacking the U.S. political system writ large, according to John Tierney at the Conservative Capital Research Center. IPS co-founder Arthur I. Waskow said, "Revolution must be planned, organized, and then pulled off through methods that put lives on the line." Other IPS founders and senior officers called the Soviet military threat a myth, and the Russian Revolution was a great example of successful revolution. Even though the group worked with Marxists trying to overthrow the U.S. government, the IPS always had an open door at the Democratic Party. In the late 70s and early 80s, 56 Democrats in Congress asked IPS to write a budget that destroyed the military and cut defense spending by half in the middle of the Cold War. But the word got out. IPS's communist influences and ties were so strong that even the New York Times Magazine had to admit it in 1981. IPS was outed, but it still had millions of dollars from billionaires like George Soros, Ted Turner, and the Rockefeller Brothers Foundation. So they laid low for a while. Now they're back, and they're calling the shots again for the Democratic Party, and not just through Gillibrand. One of the top players in IPS is named Robert Borisage. He joined the group in the early 70s straight out of Yale Law, and he's still on the IPS Board of Trustees to this day. Borisage decided to wrap the radical left's tentacles around more and more of the Democratic Party by starting the annual Take Back America conferences. They were later renamed America's Future Now conferences, and now they're the Take Back the American Dream conferences. Critics say it's the same old radicalism under a new and improved label. Only now the IPS socialist ideas are coming out of the mouths of some of the most prominent Democrat politicians in the country. Here are a few conference speakers. You may have heard of them. Barack Obama, Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, John Kerry, Nancy Pelosi, Van Jones, Maxine Waters, and the list just goes on and on. Now this anti-American, pro-Marxist group is writing the Democrats' platform. If one of their liberal Democrat puppets wins in 2020, America might just get to see how successful a socialist revolution will be in the U.S. Once we're aware of the various socialist groups that have overtaken the Democratic Party, we can begin to understand why the party supports open borders, sanctuary cities for illegal immigrants, a percentage of whom are violent gang members, hardened criminals, and potential terrorists, post-birth abortion, every LGBTQ demand, free health care, college tuition, and at least $12,000 of annual universal income for everyone, the restructuring, perestroika of America's economy and system of government that is being called for by the radical Democrats would more than triple the size of our country, our debt and everything. Absolutely. It would triple the size. And the taxes would be tripled also to pay for it. Are you going to stand up? Next time we have to tell you how the drag queen resistance, a mother, stood up in Maryland. Very brave. Tune in again next week for the Divided Kingdom. God bless you. Good night.